we've been talking about having the courage of your convictions. We've been discussing what it means to have the courage of your convictions, the understanding that our convictions, when it comes to courage, it's not just a matter of being bold or being brash, but that courage is a matter of having faith, and that we can't lose sight of how important it is that we understand that when we don't have courage, when we decide that we're going to cower back or we're not going to step out, that it's not just a matter of feeling afraid or being scared. Last week we talked about, you know, feeling the fear, but you do it anyway. Why do you do it anyway? It's because we understand that God is there for us and that He is leading us. And when He's leading us, there's nothing for us to be afraid of. And so today I want to talk about courage again, but I want to talk about it from the standpoint of how we view ourselves. Because so often when we think about what it means to be courageous and to have faith and to be bold, oftentimes the thing that limits us and stops us is our own self-image. So often we think, yeah, I believe in God. I believe God is powerful and He's powerful beyond measure, and He's going to lead us and take care of us, but He's going to do it through someone else. That my act of courage, my act of faith is insignificant. And so I want to look at it from that context so that we can really reshape and re-understand and reimagine, if you will, what it is that God, in fact, wants to use us for. And even considering that God, frankly, wants to use you because of who you are. Not in spite of who you are, but because of who you are, because of the circumstances that He puts us in. The title of the sermon today is, Not All Heroes Wear Capes, and Some Don't Wear Pants. Some don't wear pants, you know. And you'll understand why, because I want to look at this, you know, and I appreciate a few weeks ago how Brad, he was talking about Gideon, and he was sharing about how very often we think that being bold and courageous and being a man or a woman of faith means that you go out there like an action figure or a superhero, and we fail to realize that God, He's not interested in our heroics. He's not interested in our status. Sometimes it's the small things that are the most courageous, that are the most impactful. And in fact, sometimes it's the small people, it's little old you and me, that He's going to use to do great things. Now, when you think of courage, you don't usually think of this guy. You know, this is the chicken. And there's a lot of things that you might think of when you think of a chicken, right? You know, you think of this. You know, we were talking about it, how, you know, when I think of chicken, and one of my favorite dishes is fried chicken, but the fact is some people are a little healthier, and so they don't do the fried thing, so they might broil it or, you know, they want to cook it a different way. Some people don't even think of that kind of chicken. Like my kids, this is chicken to them, right? You know, this is this is real, you know, chicken nuggets. You know, I remember a time when this was like, what is this? And then, you know, when I was younger, this guy, the colonel, he was the identity of anything chicken in this country. Now, every Saturday, you know, it's these guys. We go to Chick-fil-A every Saturday. The kids go play. But, you know, chicken has changed over time, right? You can go to little corner stores now and get it at Royal Farms or, you know, Wawa or something. And then even, you know, I was telling a story about how my first experience, the first day we were here, I remember we had the one car, the kids. I dropped Charisse off at work, and we were headed to Selbyville to pick her up from work, and I got stuck behind a chicken truck with no air conditioning and the windows down. There's nothing worse. It's just awful, the smell. I remember getting close, and I was looking at the chickens, and I remarked just how chickens are just not pretty birds. You know, they are some of, they just, you know, they frown all the time, you know. And yet, even when some people think of chicken, you know, there's this guy, I believe his name is Sammy, and I remember reading People magazine, And they were talking about, they call him the chicken of the sea, right? He's a pet for this guy. And they go places, and they've gone on vacations together. And this guy, they said, this chicken, he likes to go for walks on the beach. And I thought that's fascinating that somebody, like, how can you look at him when you're hungry with a clear conscience, right? Like, he would have to become a meal at some point. But there's even other chickens like this guy. And this is from a movie. It's a Disney movie called Chicken Little, right? And the brief synopsis of the movie was that this fella was in this town full of other chickens and other animals. And basically, accident happened. He rang this alarm to alert everybody in the town that there was this invasion coming and there was all these problems, but nobody had any evidence of it except for this thing. This sign fell on him or something. And then later on, when they finally did have evidence and people started to believe him, he had lost his credibility because people thought, you rang the alarm, you got everybody all scared and in this panic, and nobody believed him even though he was telling the truth, that these aliens were coming and they were just zapping people up. And then when people started coming up missing, then it was like, oh my goodness. And they started to listen to him. Well, come to find out, the aliens were looking for their two lost other alien children, I guess it was. And so the point was, he had to stick to his guns and be brave and save everybody. But it came through his own act of courage. The thing is that no matter what you think of chicken, nobody ever associates chickens with being brave. In fact, that's something you associate with being a coward or running away from situations. And yet, oftentimes, we can do the same thing with ourselves. We can kind of think of ourselves as chickens. We can kind of think of ourselves as, no, that's not for me. I'm going to run away from it. And so I want to look at a few examples of why it is that we don't want to run away from the things that God puts in our life. And I'll start here in Esther chapter 2. Verse 8 says, when the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many young women were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Haggai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem. She pleased him and won his favor. Immediately he provided her with her beauty treatments and special food. He assigned to her seven female attendants selected from the king's palace and moved her and her attendants into the best place in the harem. Esther had not revealed her nationality and family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. Every day he walked back and forth near the courtyard of the harem to find out how Esther was and what was happening to her. Before a young woman's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments, prescribed for the women, 6 months with oil and myrrh, and 6 with perfumes and cosmetics. And this is how she would go to the king. Anything she wanted was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening, she would go there, and in the morning, return to another part of the harem to the care of Shashgaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by name. Now, just a little bit of history background for those who maybe don't know the story that well. What we see here is unfolding. Let's start with this king, Xerxes. King Xerxes had a little bit of an anger problem. People argued he had a little bit of a screw loose. He was very impulsive, and he had this festival. He's showing off all of his stuff to all the different kings and nations around him, and he wants to show off his wife, who was the king at the time. Her name was Vashti, and then she didn't want to do it. She didn't like the idea of being exploited, so he decided, you know what? We're going to get rid of her. She was deposed, got rid of her, and decided, you know, sat down with his you know, group of advisors, and they decided, we're going to get you another wife. We're going to find you somebody better than her. And so they went, and Esther, who was considered beautiful and talented and all these other things, comes along. Mordecai tells her, don't tell anybody that you're Jewish. See, they didn't know. So he said, don't tell her, no, don't tell anybody that you're Jewish. And you go along with this. Now, she's getting all these beauty treatments. She's finding favor with his advisors, with the person who was over the harem. She's, if you might want to say, she's kind of just going along and rising up the ranks. And before we get to the rest of the story, one of the things that we often have to consider, just like with Esther, is that even as we're going along the normal duties and functions of our life, God is often preparing us for something. God is often preparing us for something that right now we may not know what it is. We may even look back on our life 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, and we may think that there were a lot of things that your parents did. There were a lot of things that you did in school. There's a lot of things that you grew up with. And you might think, well, that was just how we got along. That's just how things went. Maybe it was things that you didn't like so much. Maybe there were things that were humiliating. Maybe there were things that were instructive. But even though they may seem like they were just normal, ordinary things, God was actually preparing you for possibly a situation, a relationship, or a particular thing, because God doesn't, he's not like us. He can see what's coming. He can see what he's planning you for. Even when you're in your 20s, he knows why he's doing things in your teens, in your 20s, in your 30s that are going to prepare you for something that you don't even think of as great, but that's going to be great later on in your life. And that's where the trusting in God comes in, because oftentimes we don't know why God is putting us through things. We think, why did he allow me to go through this pain? Why did he allow me to be treated this way? Why did he allow me to live in this place or do this thing? Or why didn't I get that promotion? Why didn't I get that job? Why did I end up here instead of there? Why did I meet this person instead of another person? But God is always preparing us. He's always putting us in these situations. But does our faith allow us to see how he's preparing us? Continuing on, oftentimes we think of events and, you know, big situations when it comes to courage, when it comes to being faithful. And yet, we forget that sometimes it's not a big event or a big situation that God is preparing us for or even with, but sometimes it's a relationship with somebody. Sometimes God is using us to have an impact on somebody, a friend. It could be a romantic relationship, you know. It could just be hanging out, you know. It could be any number of things. But it's not just the events or the situations that God is preparing us with. Sometimes it's the people. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, well, you know, me and this person, we're neighbors or we're coworkers, or I grew up with this person. And so we're just best buddies because, you know, we're the same age. We graduated together or something. And all along, while we're building this friendship and building this relationship, we may think it's because, hey, we got something in common. We all grew up in the same place. But in reality, God has you in that person's life so that you can impact them to see him more clearly, or in fact, so that they can be used by God to help you see things more clearly. It's not always what it seems, and sometimes we fail to realize how important we are to other people. You know, this quote I like, it said, everyone should have a friend like you. The question is, when it comes to our relationship with God, not just do we have a friend that sticks that close to us, but are we that type of friend to someone? Do we see how God is using us in a relationship, maybe not with thousands of people, but maybe just with one? Do we see how God uses us in our relationships? Continuing on, I want to look at another example of another hero who And we'll spend some time talking about her a little bit next week. But I want to look at this other hero who also didn't wear a cape, to my knowledge, and probably didn't wear pants either. Starting in Ruth chapter 1, verse 6, says, when Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, we will go back with you to your people. But Naomi said, return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you because the Lord's hand has turned against me. At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. But Ruth clung to her. Look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. We see this fascinating story, and so that we all understand, what happens here is Naomi has lost her husband. She's lost her sons. They died in battle. And so now she's got these two ladies who were her daughters-in-law. And she says, she's looking at what God did and how in battle she lost everybody. And her attitude was, you know what? God's hand is clearly against me. It says later on, says that she changed her name to Mara, which translated meant bitter. You know, she was saying, God's hand is against me. I'm bitter. You know, my life is bitter. I'm frustrated with my life. Clearly, there's nothing here for me for you all to hang on to. Why don't you go home and God will show you favor because you're still young enough to get on with your life. What we see here is that Naomi's understanding of what God had her in these daughters-in-law's life, her understanding of that was based on her own self-image, based on what she thought about herself. What God encouraged us to do is see that Naomi was going to have a great impact on Ruth. And in many ways, God wants us to do the same thing. He wants us to stop looking at our relationships and thinking, well, I can't give them what they need. I can't give them the things that, you know, I would want them to have, so they're better off without me. See, at this point, she was bitter. She was hurting. She was grieving. And so she felt like, I can't do anything for Ruth. I can't do anything for Orpah. But Ruth says, no. I see the impact that you're having on me. I see your God. I see your people. I see the difference. So often people who are around us see the difference in us too. And we have to be able to see that God puts us in people's lives not because of what we think of ourselves and our shortcomings and our failures and what we can't give. I don't have the money. I don't have the resources. I can't help you in this way. God's saying, no, but you can show them who I am with your life. That's why you're there. You're not there because your sons are there and because it was, you know, you're the mother-in-law. You're not there because I live in this neighborhood or we work together or, you know, those types of things. God's saying, no, I see the big picture. You know, we'll talk about it next week. We don't have time to go into it today. But the impact that Ruth would have on generation after generation after generation, the impact that she would have went far beyond what even she could imagine. But it started with what it was that she was getting from her relationship with Naomi. What God was using Naomi for to have an impact on Ruth. You know, sometimes that courage isn't just some, you know, big, humongous, you know, draw a line in the sand and we're going to take a stand and the whole world sees it. Sometimes it's the courage to say, I'm going to be committed to pouring into this relationship. I'm going to be committed to giving to someone in a relationship so that they can see God more clearly. Now this, you know, when we talk about courage, a lot of times the difficulty that we have in courage is we get anxious. Our emotions kind of well up, and we have to make a decision. You know, my wife and I, we've been talking about this fight or flight thing. We got a lot of fight or flight that's been going on in the Craig house for the past few weeks. And, you know, everybody doesn't always handle it the right way. Or for that matter, everybody doesn't handle it the same way, because right and wrong can be kind of subjective. You know, some of us tend to fight more than flight. And, you know, I was thinking about how courage so often gets seen by the flood of emotions and the adrenaline that comes up when you're pressed into a situation where you have to make a decision. But oftentimes we forget that it's the decision, not the emotions. I love this. He says, my anxieties have anxieties. And sometimes our life can feel like that, right? We can feel like it's, you know, fear on top of fear and anxiety on top of anxiety. We can feel all these different things. But I there were several quotes I was looking at that were helping me to define and really understand what it means to be courageous. And it comes down to decisions. It says, sometimes it's the smallest decision that can change your life forever. Sometimes it's not the big thing, it's the small thing, right? Another one, he says, when your values are clear to you, making decisions become easier. When you're not making the decision based on how you feel, but on what's right, what's going to give God glory, on principle, on knowing the truth, instead of how you feel. Because let's face it, there's a lot of times I don't feel like making the right decision. You cannot make progress without making a decision. So often we want to get, we want, you know, to just make it go away, but we get stuck because we're just unwilling to move, because our fear grips us and we allow those emotions to take over instead of making a decision and trusting God in it. Another one, tomorrow's blessings and opportunities depend on the choices we make today. Oftentimes we forget that it's the small decisions you make along the way that will oftentimes build up your faith so that you have the courage when you need it. It's almost like a savings account. You know, you build up based on these decisions so that when that opportunity comes up, you're ready to do the right thing. You're ready to act in faith. Fear is a reaction. Courage is a decision. So often we forget that fear is based in, you know, having to, that fight or flight, that anxiety. But the courage that overcomes fear is in making a decision. And the decision that we're talking about is a decision to trust God and have faith in Him and know that He's in control. And finally, I am not a product of my circumstances. I am a product of my decisions. So often we think of ourselves and our self-image and the fact that we're afraid to do things because we think that our circumstances, where we started from, what we have now, mistakes in the past, obstacles in the way. We think that those things define us. But what really defines us is the decision that we're willing to make when it's time to step out on faith and trust God. I'll close it here. Esther chapter 4, we're going to look at what, kind of fast forward a little bit and talk about the end with Esther in chapter 4, starting in verse 9. It says, Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. I pause there just to give a little setting here. There's a plot that Mordecai finds out about. There's this plot to kill all the Jews. All the people who were Jewish were going to be killed. All of God's people were going to be one by one rounded up and exterminated. And Mordecai catches wind of this plot. And so he sends a letter, he sends a message, a private message to her and says, Esther, you've got to do something. You've got to go talk to the king. You have to let him know what his advisors and what his people are doing and what they're planning to do. And she says, but I need you to understand, I'm putting myself at great risk. He's already, you know what the law is. He's going to kill me if I approach him, if I decide that I'm going to speak to him. And so she tells Mordecai, 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. Continuing on, he says, when Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa, and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. We see here that Mordecai tells her two very important things. He says, just because nobody knows that you're a Jew, don't think that you're going to survive this. Don't think that you're going to be the one who makes it. No, your plight is our plight as well. And he also tells her that it's very possible. In fact, he asserts that the reason why you've been prepared, the reason why you got all those beauty treatments, the reason why you were brought in to be with the king, the reason why you were raised up to become the queen, the reason why you've gotten everything you've gotten in your life was for this very moment right now. It was for this event. It's kind of like you're all your life, and then there's one decision you've got to make for this one time, one day, just this one thing. And sometimes we fail to realize that the decisions we make, the lack of decision, the indecision, that so many people's spiritual lives depend on you. We forget that it's like that saying, you were built for this. Mordecai's telling her, you were built for this. You were made for this. God brought you all this way for this very thing. See, she's looking at herself and she's saying, the king, he's crazy. You saw what he did to the last one. we already understand that the king is not necessarily interested in preserving me. He doesn't consider me special. I'm nobody. I'm just trying to survive. I don't want to put myself in harm's way. He says, but it's not about you as much as it is why God put you there, why God chose you. She later goes on and she's considered the linchpin in just destroying this plan. She's a hero, but she's a hero because she was willing to make a hero's decision. She was a hero because she was willing to put other people's walk with God, other people's spiritual lives, other people's faith depended on her decision. And sometimes we can forget that other people's faith depends on our decision. Our willingness to be faithful, our willingness to be courageous and do something. And what does she say? And if I perish, I perish. And if harm comes to me, harm may come to me, but I'm willing to be courageous enough to put that on the line and risk that because I understand what's at stake. Do we understand what's at stake in the relationships that we have and the people that we know, the way that we are to carry ourselves as Christians? Do we understand the responsibility that comes with that? And how many people can be changed and impacted and be brought to God because of one decision that we need to make? I'll close here with a few questions. Do you believe that you are able to do God's will and have an impact on others spiritually in spite of your status? So often we think of ourselves from the standpoint of our status and our lowly position, or the fact that, you know, I'm well past my prime, or nobody's thinking about me, or I'm just somebody in the mailroom. And we don't think of ourselves as having a particularly high status, but we forget that regardless of your status, God can use you. Not only can God use you, but oftentimes he wants the lowly person. If you look at all the people that we lift up as heroes in the faith, almost all of them, they were those who had a limitation, those who had a problem with their status, those who weren't considered particularly special, and that's why God used them, because the glory was brought to him. Do we see ourselves and believe that we can have the ability to do God's will and have an impact in spite of our status? Who are you going, or rather, who are you grooming to be more like Christ? What person needs you to see God more clearly, and are you denying them out of fear, doubt, or poor self-image? You know, we look at Naomi, and Naomi didn't think much of what she could give. She didn't think she had a whole lot she could provide to her daughters-in-law, to the point that she was pushing them away. Sometimes we can be like that. We can feel like, well, I see this person and I'm looking at them, and what they really need is a better job, or what they really need is a wife or a husband, or they need a house, or they need some money, or they need somebody who knows more Bible than I do. They need somebody more spiritual than I am to do something for them. They need somebody who's a scholar, or somebody who's got all this ministry experience, or somebody who hasn't failed as much, who doesn't have the battles and struggles and temptations that I do. And we come up with all these reasons why we can't be that person. And we want to push them away or send them to someone else. But God's saying, no, I want you to pour into their life. I want you to be the person to pray with them. I want you to be the person that grooms them, that builds them up, that shows them who I am, that my power is made perfect in your weakness. You know, so often we can be like that and we can forget that God wants to use you. God wants to actually use you to groom and build up someone else. Do we have the courage to do that? Or are we still hiding behind our own fears and doubts that we can, and our own self-image, thinking no one's going to respect me? You know, I'm bitter. My life is so bad. We've all, you know, been in that place where our life feels bitter. Feels like God's just not giving us what we need or what we want. Things just aren't going our way. clearly I can't be of service in helping someone else in their life. Do we have that person that we're pouring into and grooming? Beyond companionship, what purpose do you have in the lives of those that are closest to you? How could God use you if you saw yourself as a vessel he's been preparing rather than a victim? You know, we see this and, you know, we think about the people who are closest to us. You know, oftentimes it's easy to be courageous and bold. And, you know, I've often said, for me, it's a lot easier for me to stand up in front of a bunch of strangers and tell the good news and share the gospel. But when it's your mother, when it's your daughter, when it's your friend, when it's your son, when it's your coworker, when it's your classmate, when it's your roommate, when it's somebody close to you, oftentimes we forget that that's the reason why they're close to you. That's the reason why you're their roommate and somebody else isn't. That's the reason why you're their brother and somebody else isn't. That's the reason why you have that job. You don't have that job. Yeah, you're going to get the money. Yeah, you're going to get the, you know, financial stability and all those things. But the reason you have that job is for the relationship that you have with that person or those people. The reason why you married into that family is not just so that you could have a marriage and enjoy life and companionship, but because of what you're going to mean to so many people in that family. But do we see that purpose in our lives? Do we see how God has been preparing us, even through hardships, even through failures? God has been preparing you to be of influence to those who are closest to you. And finally, whose life can be changed by you simply having the vision to recognize the moment that you're in right now? Sometimes, much like Esther, what we saw is Esther was thinking of herself, and she was obviously scared for very good reason, because she knows that she was forced to marry this crazy guy. But the fact is, Mordecai had to remind her, this moment where you are, this very situation that you're in right now, this isn't an indecision. This isn't, I'm just going to sit here and do nothing. Your decision right now, this moment, could change not only your life forever, but so many others. Just by making one decision of faith and of courage. And many of us, it could be different things. It could be different levels of faith that are required. But many of us, we have those decisions right now. That decision that, you know what? I am going to talk to my daughter or my son. I am going to talk to my friend. I am going to call up my mother. I'm going to call up my coworker. The next time we are riding together, I'm going to speak to them about who God is and how it's affected my life. I'm going to tell this person, no, this is why I don't do this, or this is why I do that. But in this moment, many of us are in those moments where we have to be courageous. And we may think, but I don't want to put my job on the line. I don't want to put this relationship on the line. I don't want to hurt somebody. I don't want to have to lose this thing. And so we go through the fight or the flight, and we forget the moment that we're in requires not just overcoming the fear, but making the decision that you're going to trust God, that you're going to give it to him and let him take care of it. And as she said, if I perish, I perish, but I'm going to trust God. In all of these different examples, be it Gideon, be it, you know, Esther, be it, you know, whoever we've looked at, looking at these people, it was always a matter of, am I going to trust God, or am I going to fall back into thinking that I'm not worthy, and I'm not worthy to measure up to this situation, and I'm not going to fight? We have to be willing to make the decision that we're going to give it all to God and trust him and never lose sight of the moment that we're in. And some are in the moment today, a moment of decision right now that we have to make. It could be a personal decision. It could be a decision that we have to make because we see what's going on with someone else. And the question becomes, if not you, then who? That's what Mordecai was asking Esther. If not you, then who else? Why has God been putting all these resources, all these experiences in your life? The answer is because he's been building you up to this.